Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us and for hanging around with us today. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. She's our good friend and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Joan, welcome back.
Thanks, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning to you. It's good to have you back.
Thank you very much.
How are you doing today, Joan?
Oh, gosh. Going to do that again?
It's good to have you back. Joan, you know, before we get into the letter, we might want to talk a little bit of politics. No, I'll tell you what. We can wait on politics till we get over there.
Your show, you do whatever you want.
Because there are some good news. I mean, there's some news, I should say.
Some news.
There's some news this week. I didn't mean to say good news. I meant to say news.
Yes, you did.
On the political. Well, no. There's some. It's kind of balanced. It's fair and balanced news because we're going to report on both sides of the issue.
So
we'll wait on. We'll hold off on that. Let's talk about health care. That's the lead on the letter this week.
Well,
right?
There's the bad news.
Yeah,
we're going to get right into the bad news.
That's not good news at all, is it?
No. Well, I mean, the basic message is it's going to get better, but not for a while. It's going to have to get worse first. And that's clearly not, I'm sure, what anybody wants to hear, but that's pretty much the way things are going. We're saying for the next 5 years, the trajectory in terms of cost is just going straight up.
Well, back to our comment about our analogy of we may not like the numbers, but we gotta like the trend.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, you guys report this week that the health care cost is going to rise 7% on average a year. And as ugly as that number is, we like that better than the ones we've been having for the last 3 or 4 years.
Right. That at least the gain is slowing a little.
Well, we've been having double digits. I mean, 11, 12, 13, 14% increases annually since about 99.
Exactly. It's really hard to believe, but true.
7% is welcome, believe it or not. But the thing is, Joan, as you guys point out, it's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse. And Joan, if you remember, over the last couple of years, when you and I have reported on this, we've talked about the fact that this situation was going to keep compounding. The negatives were going to keep compounding to the point to where something was going to have to be done. We're going to have to do something. And that's kind of what you guys are pointing at here on page one.
Right. And that's kind of where we're going here. And that's why it's going to take a little while, because as bad as things seem now, you know, Congress, they tend not to act unless there's a crisis, a real crisis.
Yeah, yeah.
So, or a manufactured one, either one. But it's going to take a crisis before there is movement legislatively.
Well, you guys say that though that you know, one of the crises is happening right now, and that's more and more people are uninsured.
Right, and we're saying the number of uninsured is zooming, 53 million by 2006. That seems like a huge number to me, but it's true.
Well, I mean, what is that? 18% of our population, something like
that. Well, I'm no mathematician,
yeah.
So I'll defer to whatever
I think
number you.
That's something like it's under a fifth. It's you know, 16 to 18% or so of our population, and you know, a lot of those people, I think the uninsured ranks are increasing. One of the reasons it's increasing is because of the people who are working for themselves. The increased number of people who are starting small businesses, and they just can't afford to capitalize their business and pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month for insurance.
Right. Well, I'm sure that's probably part of it. And we're saying part of it also is employers who are not, who are eliminating, who may have had employee health plans, but then eliminate them.
Yes. Where we are, Joan, on this, it seems to me, is similar. This is a situation that's kind of the first cousin of the employment problem we have right now. As you know, we've got some completely reordering of the way we employ people in America, from the manufacturing age to the information age.
That's true.
And it's the same thing happening with healthcare. We're changing from as we change from manufacturing to information, we're going from people working for larger companies to people working for smaller companies. And the tax codes right now are still structured to favor insurance provided by the larger companies, not to favor insurance provided by the smaller companies.
Well, and you've always said that the 21st century is the century of the entrepreneur. I guess the 20th century, or at least the middle of the 20th century, was the period of the big company.
No question about it.
And now that that is sort of breaking up a bit, some kind of, there's going to be a, have to be some kind of paradigm shift in the whole range of benefits. I mean, we're not going to talk about pensions today, but that's another whole issue that kind of goes along with this.
It certainly is, and it's all there. It's all part and parcel to this whole shift in the way people work in America.
Right.
And what the problem is, Joan, is that those of us in the marketplace, we get that, but the people in Washington don't get that. And one of the reasons is because it's not the way they're used to thinking, or they want to think about taxing people and giving up tax advantages.
Right, and I think that's going to take some time to really work through the political system and make them see the need for change.
Well, one of the things I think that there is an eruption on the horizon, Joan. I think that there's a pretty significant thing that's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to be in a year or 10 years. But politicians should look at the way people are working now and the way they're going to be working. And the ones who are on the wrong side of where that's going are going to wind up not having any constituents, in my opinion. In my opinion, Joan, to disregard the entrepreneurial things that are going on in this country right now for any politician is to do that at their own peril.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, because what's going to happen is one election year, somebody's going to wake up and they're going to say, wait a minute, you know, nobody wants to listen to me about the old way of taxing people and the old way of giving out tax advantages.
Right.
And they're going to have to deal with millions of entrepreneurs rather than a handful of big companies.
Yeah, and with those kinds of numbers, they'll make their voices heard.
That's exactly right, and that's when the eruption is going to happen, I think, or the revolution, or whatever you want to call it. Okay, when we come back, Joan, some things are happening on the drug issue with regard to Canada. You know, Canada's had cheaper drugs than us in some cases, and Kiplinger's got some things to say about what Congress is probably going to do about that. That's coming up after these messages. 20 after, stay with us. After. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, before we leave the healthcare thing, I don't remember if we mentioned a couple of the things that Kiplinger says that they are likely to do. Did you talk about that? The tax credits?
You didn't get to that point, no.
Yeah. Tell us what Kiplinger, you guys have looked into your crystal ball, and tell us what, I don't want to miss that opportunity. Tell us what you guys think is going to happen.
Well, we're not saying that we're going to have national health insurance or anything like that. So we're saying that we'll still be an employer-based system, but a lot of the responsibility will be shifted to the employee so that, you know, you'll sort of have a carrot and stick thing going on with employers. If they participate, they get a lot of tax breaks. If they don't participate, they would have to contribute to a fund for the uninsured.
Mm-hmm.
So, the employers, in my mind, unfortunately, we'll still sort of be left holding the bag in a sense. It doesn't seem me to be fair that employers are just expected to offer health insurance.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so either. But what we've got to do, Joan, is get this portable. That's the word I think this that we need to
be
focusing on.
Well, that would be huge. Right?
We've got to make it portable, yeah. just like the 401k, right?
Exactly. Right. Well, and see, the 401k has its own problems, so you have to do it carefully.
Right. But make it portable so that you can take your benefits with you, and have them wherever you are, whether you work for yourself or whether you work for somebody else. And you know, Joan, if you don't take care of yourself, then you pay for the premium. The people around you who did take care of themselves don't have to float your boat, so to speak.
Right.
So if your lifestyle creates medical problems for you. So, okay, let's move over and talk about some of the drug issues. You guys say that Congress is going to think about okaying importation of cheap RX drugs, especially from Canada?
Right. And, you know, that there's concerns about drug imports, but on the other hand, people really want and need cheaper prescription drugs. So this would be a compromise because they would only be allowed from Canada, no other country.
Haven't people been driving across the border to get drugs in Canada and coming back? I mean, haven't some of the people in the upper half of the United States, haven't they been doing that?
Oh, they sure have. Absolutely.
Have they been stopping them? Has the government been trying to prevent that from happening?
Well, that I don't know. I'm sure the drug companies would like the government to stop that from happening.
I know people who go to Mexico to get drugs.
Really?
Yeah, they fly down to get, and they go down there once a year, and they stock up on a couple of drugs. And
wow.
One of them is the skin cream, Retin-A kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
One person I know uses that, and they go down there, they stock up while they're there and have a little vacation and come back.
Ooh, I'll have to try that when I need my Retin-A.
You don't need Retin-A, Joan. You're beautiful just like you are. You don't need any Retin-A. But
in lieu of a raise, I know.
That's right. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks.
But even Mexico, that's the case. I don't know whether, I mean, you typically don't think of Mexico as a hotbed of drug research, but but anyway, what's this going to mean, Joan, if they do this? Allow drugs.
What's it going to mean to the drug companies? You mean, or
pick one?
Oh.
I'm just thinking that this is going to, is this going to what's the impact going to be on consumers?
I guess the problem is since it's only being allowed from one country, it's going to be on a very limited basis. Because most people in the country really can't take advantage of going across the border to Canada. So it may be almost a symbolic gesture. It doesn't reduce the need for a Medicare prescription drug benefit or for the need to lower prices across the board on prescription drugs in this country.
Well, you say, Kiplinger says that the cost could be as much as 30 to 75% less than U.S. drugs. So here's my question. Is that because Canada is subsidizing it? Is that because they have lower standards for the quality of drugs? Are the U.S. companies ripping us off? Are U.S. companies being required to do the R&D for the world? I mean, why is Canada drugs cheaper than ours?
Well, I think it's pretty much all of the above.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll see. And you know, folks, I don't know if you know, depending on where you live in the world, you may think, well, why do I care about that? But there's a lot of people, aren't there, Joan, up in the northern half of the country, who, you know, remember the old days when only a few states had lotteries?
Oh yeah.
And people would come through the office and say, hey, we're making a run to New Jersey. Do you
right.
you want us to bring you back a lottery ticket? You know. And so I think I'm thinking that maybe people are saying, you know, we're making a run to Calgary. Do you want to? He wants to bring you back some Retin-A or some Viagra or something.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, that's happening. And 30 to 75%, that's compelling, isn't it?
Oh, it's amazing. It really is.
Yeah. Joan, what about the economy? Let's move on down and talk a little bit about the economy. Good news in the third quarter, huh?
Wow. 7.2% increase in GDP in the third quarter of this year?
Yeah.
That is blistering. You kind of don't want it to keep rising at that rate, but it's nice to see for one quarter.
Good news for the economy, in a way. I mean, as you say, we don't want to sustain that. That's the even I, Joan, believe it or not, even I don't want us to have 7.2% sustained growth. I mean, that's crazy. That's like going 100 miles an hour down a one way street, the wrong way. But
being chased by inflation.
Exactly, no question. But couldn't be good news for the Democratic candidates. That's not the news that they wanted. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with our good friend Joan Pryde. It's 29 after. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The small business advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks for hanging around today. 800-531-3815. And the website is www.jbsba.com. And don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter. And this week's article, the feature article, is Looking for Things in the Wrong Places. And I've gotten a lot of comments from you. Thank you to those of you who've written back and said that that meant a lot to them. I really appreciate that. That means a lot to me when I know that something I've written hit home for you. And thank you for that very much. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're talking about the economy and the 7.2% increase. You know, originally that number was 6%. They just keep revising it upward.
Yeah, they keep finding more growth that they didn't know about.
Well, and you know, that's the good news about that. Even though it's a holiday quarter, fourth quarter is not going to be 7.2%. It doesn't need to be. That gives us a nice little average for 2003, a nice little finish. A lot of people predicted that. You and I predicted it on the show that the second half of 2003 was going to be when the recovery was going to turn into the expansion.
You said it would be better. We just didn't know how much better.
That's right. That's right. But the thing is, even though that's an absurd number, 7.2% growth, it's still good news. It's the kind of shot in the arm, kind of the confidence builder that we all needed, wasn't it?
Oh, no question about it, because we needed some evidence that this recovery was really underway, and it's really hard to argue with 7.2%.
Well, you know, yeah, it's like a runner, you know, finishing up a distance race. You know, has he got any kick at the end, and can he turn it on and, you know, have any sprint at the end? And that's kind of what that was like. It gave us a lot of confidence, and it's a good number for us to talk about it. And as you know, Joan, the marketplace is a very emotional beast, isn't it?
Boy, you said it.
Not just Wall Street marketplace, but Main Street.
Oh, sure.
Is a very emotional beast too, and
right.
So that's good news. And so hopefully, we're going to see. You know, maybe I'd like to see maybe let's have a 4.5% quarter in the fourth quarter. And I mean, I don't have any idea what it's going to be.
Place your order now. Place your order now.
Exactly.
For your 4%.
That's exactly right. And then hopefully in 2004 we can settle down and get some, you know, some good solid growth and get some folks back to work. Let's talk a little bit about, this is something that you guys report this week, Joan. I think we should cover about the home builders. A lot of people don't realize it, but there actually are national companies that build homes, aren't there?
Well, yeah, and this is interesting because, like, an example here is Pulte. I know Pulte I thought Pulte was a local Washington, D.C. area builder.
Yep.
I didn't realize they were national.
Mm-hmm.
I just assumed that they were native to Washington, and they're not, I guess.
So many of us look around our neighborhoods and our communities, and we see a company building houses, and we think of them as a local company, but there are many national companies building homes. And one of the things they're doing is they're buying up other companies, aren't they, around the country?
Right, and there's a lot of consolidation going on, and that's what we're mentioning this because small subcontractors and suppliers may find, you know, their lives getting a little more difficult when that happens.
Exactly, and here's what happens: the way you've been buying from somebody, selling your stuff, I should say, to a contractor locally, and you're selling, you know, building materials. And all of a sudden, that company gets bought up by a larger company, and they've got a national contract with somebody. And you're in, you know, you're in Nashville, Tennessee, and all of a sudden, the drywall for the next house is coming from Boise, Idaho.
Yeah.
You know, from a national
exactly.
warehouse or something, and
right.
and you're locked out.
Yep.
So keep your head up on that, folks. Make sure you know who your customers are. Make sure you know where their decisions are being made, so that you get invited to that party. And that's just a little bit of a heads up there. And I appreciate Kiplinger pointing this out, Joan, today, this week.
No, thank
too,
you.
By the way, let's talk about trade. This is the bad news. The trade deficit's going up some more in 2004, isn't it?
You know, our economy is outpacing that of our trading partners, and we we continue to soak up, you know, imports like a sponge.
Well, and it's true, and we've kind of got double jeopardy there, don't we, Joan? I mean, on the one hand, you know, we've got people taking our jobs, like China taking our jobs, and on the other hand, as we grow our economy, and as Europe is floundering, as Japan is floundering, and China's not quite ready for us to, you know, to be a good consumer customer, as our economy grows, we're sucking up more of their goods, and so that's creating a trade imbalance, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a double whammy there.
Sure.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got more to come. We're going to talk a little politics. We come back after these messages and maybe even a little bit about spam. Not the kind you eat, the kind you hate. Right after these messages, 20 till. Stay with us. Hi, Jim Blassingame here. I want to tell you about the best business planning software on the planet, Business Plan Pro by Palo Alto Software. One of the things that makes Business Plan Pro easy to use is the Plan Wizard. The Plan Wizard literally leads you through setting up your plan. If you can point and click, Business Plan Pro and the Plan Wizard will help you get your business plan on paper and working. Oh yeah, their after-the-sale support is the best in the business too. If you'd like to see what several real business plans look like, go to bplans.com. That's bplans.com. From there, you can link to their main site, paloaltosoftware.com, if you want to purchase and download one of their products. Or you can talk to a live Palo Alto person at 1-800-433-1397. That's 1-800-433-1397. And be sure to tell them the Small Business Advocate sent you. Hello, friends. This is Jim Blassingame. It's with great pride and pleasure that I introduce our newest sponsor partner, Office Depot. As you should know by now, we're pretty particular about who we associate our brand with and recommend to you. In 5 years, my promise has always been to find and tell you about only the very best resources for your small business, whether that be an expert guest on the show or a sponsor. You probably didn't need me to tell you that Office Depot fits this profile, but I'm going to anyway. What you need to know, is more than words at Office Depot. When it comes to offering solutions for what you and I go through running our businesses, these guys get it. In the weeks and months ahead, I'm going to be telling you about some specific Office Depot offerings, but for now, I think it's enough that you should know, whether in your hometown store or at OfficeDepot.com, the folks at Office Depot want to be your partner too. If you haven't already, give them a chance to prove it. Thanks, Office Depot, for being on our team. Since I began broadcasting this show in 1997, part of my contract with you has been to introduce you to only the very best people, companies, and products that I can find. IBM fits that profile 100%. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know by now, IBM is my sponsor in bringing you this show and all of my other small business resources. Take it from me, IBM has done a great job of developing the kinds of products and services you and I need to grow our small businesses and that help us gain a competitive edge through technology. You can find all of IBM's small business offerings at ibm.com/business center, including a free electronic newsletter, special offers, and online advice on helping you make the right technology and e-business choices. I hope you'll say thanks to IBM for helping me help you by giving them first shot at your technology and e-commerce business. That's www.ibm.com/business center. It's a great small business website. Mr. Mark Knopfler on guitar there, ladies and gentlemen. Good job there, Mark. This is Jim Blassingame. That's me on the drums there. Joan, you're on bass, right?
How many years ago?
Joan Pride. See, that was a shot, folks, in case you didn't get that. Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We're back at 17 till. And by the way, folks, I want to encourage you to check out Kiplinger's website, kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com. Just go there today and check it out and look, noodle around on it. There's a lot of stuff there that everybody can enjoy for free. You can get some information there for free. And if you should decide that you'd like to find out more about their publications, like their flagship Kiplinger letter, which has been out now since now in his 81st year, I should say. And also there are three biweekly letters, which are the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. Did I say that right? Agriculture, California,
yes,
tax. And then also they got a magazine, Joan. What's the name of that magazine?
Right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And all, now that's, by the way, that's in, available in on in the newsstands and the bookstores. So you can find that. You can pick that up locally. But you can also subscribe to all of those at Kiplinger.com. And I bet if they call this number, Joan, that you're going to give them, I bet they can do it there too, can't they?
Well, you know, actually, there's two ways they can contact us. Our 800 number is 800-544-0155. Or you can email us at sub.services at Kiplinger.com.
Sub.services at Kiplinger.com.
And that being, of course, the short for subscription services.
Right. And so what do we say when we say...
Say, I want that Blasting Game free trial.
That's right. 30-day free trial.
Say, what?
And then they'll send you some information. They'll write you back about what you need. They need from you, right?
Right.
Okay. So check that out. We make it easy for you, folks. And next week, we'll have a carrier pigeon way that you can contact Kiplinger,
right,
too. So, okay, Joan, let's talk about let's move over and talk about politics. The senior vote, is the senior vote up for grabs next year for 2004 election?
Well, you would think not, because I think the stereotype I would think of the older voter is conservative Republican.
Oh, you
but
would?
Saying,
wait a minute. Wait, time out.
Okay.
Those people are, those are Franklin Roosevelt people, aren't they?
Yeah.
So you think, you think the older generation, the octogenarians, are Republicans?
Well, maybe they tend to be, oh yeah.
Okay.
Right. You think they're all Democrats?
No, I just wouldn't have thought that they were mostly
Republicans.
They want
Republicans. Their Medicare, certainly, but I think they're all Republicans.
Okay.
Well, at least I would think that the older you get, the more conservative you get.
Yeah. Okay. Keep going.
But whether or not that's true, we're saying that the president has his work cut out for him, which I think is kind of surprising. Because I would have thought that they would have tended to support him in droves. But I think one of the problems is, you know, once again, the what do they call it, the third rail of politics,
mm-hmm.
Medicare and Social Security. There's been a lot of battle over the prescription drug coverage and whether to change Medicare. And if there appears to be a perception out there, rightly or wrongly, that the president is not, I guess, favoring the senior's position on this. And he has some work to do to shore up his position with them.
Well, I think the President Bush does have some hard work, and for two reasons. Number one, I don't think that the majority of the elderly are not Republican. I think they're more likely to be Democrat because, I mean, if you talk to anybody over 75, Joan, they're going to say, you ask them who Hoover is, they're going to say he's the guy who caused us to go into the Great Depression.
Well, and I don't know how Gore didn't carry Florida.
Well, I don't know either, but, I mean, that's Gore, though. That's his problem. But that's one thing. The other thing is, the other thing that hurts Bush are the Democrats try to scare the elderly about him. Right?
Well, or they're telling the truth about him, one or the
okay.
other.
Okay. But either way, the point is that whether it's the truth or not, that's one of their sticks that they use.
Right.
That's one of their strategies that they use.
Right.
So I do think he's got his work cut out for. I think he cannot take the elderly for granted.
While we're talking, point.
While we're talking about politics, though, let's talk about what happened this week, Joan. What happened this Tuesday?
Oh boy, two big Republican wins, Kentucky and Mississippi.
Yeah.
Grabbed governorships from Democrats.
Nine presidential Democratic candidates call your office. I mean, that they had to be watching that pretty close, Joan. I mean,
sure.
what's the number now for Republican governors?
A lot.
It's in the high 20s, isn't it?
It's certainly more than half, yeah.
Yeah, it's 28 or 9 or something. I forgot. I wish I knew that number. I ought to know.
And it's very important because when you have a state house turnover like that, you have the person at the top, of course, I would think controls the political machinery in the state.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very, very important for any presidential candidate coming into that state.
Well, and the thing is, but before the Republicans get too excited, Joan, let's remember Pennsylvania and let's remember Michigan.
Well, true.
Both of those had pretty strong, pretty popular, very successful Republican governors, and they both went Democrat last time, right?
Right. You know what that means. You know, the electorate likes to split their vote.
What is it they say, Joan? All politics is local?
Local, yeah.
No question about it. Joan, let's talk about... I want to stay on politics. I got one more thing to say.
Okay.
Another area in politics. We got two significant Democrat senators that we know are retiring. One new announced and one not so new announced. Miller from Georgia and Graham from Florida.
Right.
So that's two, at least two.
Well, Miller was one of many that we already knew about. Hollings is another. Mm-hmm. And I should
I forgot about Hollings.
Yeah, that's huge.
That is huge. And now this week, Graham announced, right, from Florida.
Yes.
He dropped out of the presidential race. And
a little bit of a surprise there.
He said, I'm taking all my marbles and going home.
Right.
Yeah. Quick break, 10-2. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about that spam, and I promise you, right after these messages. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Iraq with our good friend, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Back at 7-0, Mr. Carlos Santana on guitar. Santana's okay, right, Joe?
Yeah, I guess. You
we
know,
like...
but Santana also, that's a good example, has done work since the 70s. Okay?
But this is a classic, Joe, and I love this song. Everybody loves that song. Oh, you come over. I'm sorry, that's Black Magic Woman. That's a different one.
That's right.
Yeah, let's talk about spam, Joe. What's the news on spam?
Okay, well... this is interesting. Firms that sell via email are sort of lining up to fight spam, even though you would think that they wouldn't. But spam filters are getting a lot more aggressive, so that you know, legitimate automatic message senders are having a lot of difficulties.
Folks, if you're getting my newsletter, and 10,000 of you are, then every week I have new difficulty. And we have probably the most sophisticated. We now, as of the last month, we have the most sophisticated method of getting through the gauntlet of ISP filters and spam blockers that's available to mankind. And we still have challenges every week. We still have 300 to 600 or so where we have some challenges getting through.
Wow.
You might say to yourself, well, Jim, out of 10,000, 300 to 600, that's a pretty good, that's not a bad failure rate.
Well,
but what about those 300 to 600 people who have asked to receive my publication?
Exactly.
You know, it may not be a big deal to me on numbers, but it's a big deal to each one of them.
Right. Oh, sure.
And so that's what, Joan, people don't realize about spam, it's insidious when you receive it. But the controlling of it is really impinging on your liberties, isn't it?
From the receiving end, we've been trying out a lot of different spam filters, and boy, it's hard to get a good one. It's hard to get a good one that only filters out the bad stuff.
Well,
kind of like chemotherapy, which kills the bad cells and the good cells at the same time.
See, I've got a new spam filter, and it does a pretty good job, but it actually does. You know, if it filters 80 spam, one or two will be good. Will be good ones. I got to go get and move back over.
Right.
But there are other issues. I mean, this whole spam thing. If we got to figure out how to get a handle on it, because it's basically like every delivery truck in America getting out on the streets and stopping. You know, and are driving it at 2 miles an hour or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's holding
up. That's a good way to look at it.
It's holding up legitimate commerce is what it's
right.
doing.
And right.
we need to figure something else out there.
Yes.
Joan, here's another one quickly. I want to talk about a technology issue. Remember when, during Y2K, the folks, you'll remember that you got a letter from some of your big suppliers, your big customers, and they said, if you're not Y2K compliant, if you can't prove to us that you are by this certain date, you're not going to be a vendor for us anymore. We've got to make sure all of our downline is Y2K compliant. Remember that, Joan?
Yes.
That's about to happen with inventory tracking chips, isn't it?
Well, right. And, barcodes are on their way out if this item is correct, and RFIDs are coming in. They're little chips that are going to be on products, and that's going to be the way to scan and track inventory in the future.
So, folks, if you're manufacturing something, if you're producing anything that the bigger companies are using, look, one of these days you're going to get a letter. It's going to look a lot like that Y2K letter, I think. Joan, don't you?
Yeah, and the Y2K thing was, you know, here and gone, but yeah. The RFID thing is not going away.
We're going to be living with that, and they're going to say, if you can't embed these tracking devices in your stuff, we're not going to buy from you anymore. And you could literally be out of business because of that.
That's it.
In a period of maybe a few months. So all we're saying is a word to the wise, heads up on this one, pay attention, start reading about it, find out what's going on.
So start planning now.
Absolutely. Well said. Joan, 30 seconds. What's going on in Iraq? We got some challenges over there, don't we?
Oh, gosh. Where do I start? Well, as you know, since the Chinook helicopter shoot down, this has been, a tough, tough week. And we're saying violence isn't going to wind down anytime soon. You know, the president has said he would stay the course, but you've got some entrenched foreign extremists and Saddam loyalists that are battling our folks, and it's going to be very tough.
Yep. And we need to find Saddam Hussein. We need to take a picture of Rumsfeld over to Syria and Iran, and tell them if they don't straighten up, we're going to open up a can of rummy on them. And we got to get their attention. And you know what else, Joan? Saudi Arabia. I'm hearing more and more that Saudi Arabia is contributing to the problems up there.
Not surprised.
So we got to get a handle on this for a lot of reasons. Thanks, Joan. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
See you next time. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame. You know who I am. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.